Put those four fingers up. Fourth and final hour on this gorgeous Thursday afternoon. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Chase McCabe with you. Elliot Freeman from Sportsnet, 31 Thoughts. You should definitely check that out. Hockey Night in Canada. He now
soon
joins
to be 32.
Us. Soon to be 32. And let's just start with number 32. They made their announcement about an hour ago, even though it leaked out beforehand, that Dave Haxtell will be their first ever head coach. He spent about 3.5 seasons in Philadelphia as the Flyers coach, over a decade at North Dakota. There was a bet on here, Elliot, that I had with a listener earlier in the week. He guaranteed Seattle was going to do exactly what Vegas and was going to go all the way to the Cup final in their first year. And I said, I bet you're wrong. We put our hair on the line, which I never do. And he has just called in the last 10, 15 minutes and has backed out on the bet. He does not. He's underwhelmed.
Because of Haxtell, right?
He's underwhelmed.
Because it's not a big name. Yeah.
Yeah, by the hire.
Wow.
So, yeah, what do you make of that?
Well, first of all, I hope that someone else decides to step up so this challenge can continue. That's my initial reaction.
Agreed.
Yeah, you know, I have to say I've seen a lot of similar reaction. You know, it's kind of funny how it works. Like, that was the only name that didn't get out. I got some notes in the last couple days that maybe it wasn't going to be Tocchet, that it was possible they were going to look elsewhere. And then I started thinking maybe it was going to be Tony Granato. And then this morning, someone said to me, start looking into Dave Haxtell. And someone else said to me, find connections between Haxtell and Francis. And it was, they were with Team Canada together at the 2019 World Championships. And, you know, I was pretty sure I had it, but, you know, there's always that nagging doubt. And I couldn't nail it down 100%. So that was a bit disappointing. But they did a really good job of keeping it quiet. It actually really surprised me. Ron Francis is a vault, but it's very tough for things like this to keep it tight, and they did. On the overall situation, I am a little bit surprised. There's no question about that. I think that, you know, Haxtell, when he was in Philadelphia, he stepped into a situation where there were a lot of established players there, and I think at times there was some pushback on some of the things that he wanted to do. And this is going to be a different situation. I also think there's, you know, the world is littered with coaches who didn't do great their first time out, and they did a lot better their second time out. And I'm very curious to see how Haxtell is. He's very cerebral. He's not a very emotional guy. I think in sports you have to be emotional at times. You have to use emotion to push your players. You know, Laviolette, who you guys saw well, he was a master of that. Very good at that. That's the one thing I would say about him is he needs to learn the emotion a bit more.
Yeah, we learned when Peter Laviolette took his gum out of his mouth and took a step down on the bench.
Yeah, everybody was in trouble.
You better get out of the way. Get out of the way. Clear the area. And if you're a ref, don't skate over there. Just turn around and, you know, show him your back. I wouldn't go over there. I also said this last hour, Elliot. You know, we love raucous atmospheres. We love crazy atmospheres. Certainly, we've had big moments in Bridgestone Arena. You love it. You love the fans. You love the passion. You love even the blue-collar mentality where everybody's just crazy and they're going nuts. Nassau Coliseum provides that. But I've got to be honest. That was one of the dumbest things I've ever seen after a game concluded, where the home team pushes a series to Game 7 in a thrilling overtime goal, 68 seconds in, and you reward your home team. You're so thrilled and over the top by throwing hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of beers on the ice where the players skate off because they felt unsafe. It's the dumbest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, it wasn't exactly Mensa, I will say that. We're probably lucky in a lot of ways that Tampa didn't win that game and they weren't getting the whichever bowl they were getting, the trophy for winning the conference. That could have been really ugly. I think we're really fortunate that that happened. It wasn't a great, I mean, watching the games from there have been spectacular. and we're really going to lose something as part of our league when that building goes away. You know, that was really the first place where I watched a playoff game this year, and I said, holy cow, do I miss not having fans in the building, and realized how septic some of the Canadian games really looked with no fans. And, you know, antiseptic. But I just look at it like, we're lucky it went that way. I'm sure it won't do that again. We can't have that again. But I wouldn't want to temper what that building has meant for the playoffs. Definitely a bad ending.
Yeah,
to a
no.
Great run there. Yeah,
I mean, if that's the last ever game there, yeah, no, you don't want it to change. But, my goodness, whenever you've got, what was it, Eberle doing the post-game interview on television, which typically is done on the bench or in between the benches, he's doing it down the tunnel because he doesn't feel safe. It's ridiculous. That's his crowd. That's not because they lost.
I kind of wondered if like one of those players would pick up one of the beers and drink it, to be perfectly honest.
That would have been a great move.
That would have been a great move. How do you think this is going to play out tonight in Montreal? This has got an, I mean, gosh, they've got an opportunity to be that example that we always bring up, right? Just get in and you never know what can happen. They've got the opportunity to be that team like the Blues, and we can state all the other examples of, you know, that surprise team that had the least amount of points that gets in and gets all the way to the Stanley Cup final. Do you think they can do it?
I think they can. I think they've really frustrated Vegas. Looks like Leonard's going to play tonight in goal. They've really frustrated Vegas. You know, it was funny. Like, some of the Canadian viewers got mad at me the other night because I started referring to Montreal as Islanders light, and they're mad that I'm disrespecting them, that they're just not, that I'm saying they're not as good as the Islanders. I mean, you just cannot please people. I think they've discovered an identity. They make it hard to get through them. They do unbelievable in the neutral zone. You know, they've got four big, strong defensemen that make it very hard to get to the net. And they've got talented guys that if you make a mistake, they can put it in your net. And then they've got Price, the human eraser at the end. It's an outstanding combination of guys. And what it does is they've all bought in. Like, they don't do what they're not supposed to do because they know if they don't play as a group, they're not going to win. They have to be united. They have to play together. And they are committed to doing that. They have really frustrated Vegas. You can see that last game. I mean, you guys know what the Vegas home crowd is like. They took that crowd out of the game in game one in Vegas. They blew it by taking too many penalties. They took that crowd out of the game in game two in Vegas for two periods, and they held on for dear life in the third, and they won. That game last night, or the other night, they took them out of the crowd almost the entire game. Vegas did get a goal, but I never felt in that one that Montreal was really threatened. They frustrated Vegas. They're having a hard time getting through them. I still think Vegas can come back and win this series, but I don't know if I've seen, like, when Vegas was down 2-0 to Colorado, I got a text from someone there who said, I think we're still going to be fine. I think they're a bit more worried this time.
Elliot Friedman is with us, and Elliot, it brings up a great philosophical question that I know is getting debated, and it probably has every year that this happens. You have two really tight checking teams that play the great team game that maybe lack the individual talent against the juggernauts that everybody would long to have that play the exciting brand during the regular season. So how do you feel? Like, I know the Predators are sort of moving towards that Islanders/Canadians model. Is, you know, maybe out of necessity, right? The way they have to. It's maybe easier to build that way than build a real stack team. But how much do you think who wins this thing is going to influence how teams build themselves?
Well, I the way I look at it, I don't think a lot has changed in hockey. I think you almost have to have two teams. A team that can win in the regular season and get you into the playoffs, and a team that can get you through the playoffs. And the reason is, guys, I think it's impossible to play 82 regular season games like you play the playoffs. Yep. You know, the most games you can play to win the Stanley Cup is 28. And could you imagine trying to play 82 games like teams play the 28 games in the playoffs? You can't do it. You're not as committed. The travel's tougher. The schedule's tougher. You're playing different opponents. You just have bad nights. And in the playoffs, all of that goes away. Your commitment to detail is tighter. You've got one opponent. The travel's much easier. The focus is there. It's a different beast. Nobody takes a night off. Or if you take one, then it's going to be 20 more before you take another one, really. And I just think you have to have teams that can play both ways. I think they should expand the playoffs. The league doesn't like the idea. And one of the reasons they say is because it actually takes work. 50% of the teams make the playoffs. You have to earn your spot. And I think that's true. But I don't think it's as hard to play, anywhere near as hard to play, in the regular season as the playoffs. And, everybody gets on the refereeing, and there have been some things I really haven't liked this year. But I'm one of the people who really thinks that the people that change the most are the players. Like, they will do things to each other in the playoffs that they will not do in the regular season. And I just think you can't win without great players. You have to have skill, but you also can't win without a great team commitment and a willingness in the playoffs to make life very hard on the other teams. Like Tampa, and I've talked about this with you guys, they're dirty. Everybody thinks they're this skilled team. They are a skilled team, but they'll kill you. And they've got a lot of tough guys who play nasty hockey, and that's the way you got to win in the playoffs. The playoffs aren't for wimps. You don't win with wimps, with wimpiness in the playoffs.
Elliot, David Poile's been in Nashville since day one. He's made a lot of trades over the years. I think everybody would gravitate towards, he couldn't stand trading Shea Weber, but it was the contract that remember the offer sheet with Philadelphia. That's what I think he could live with. And that's part of the reason he was interested, and obviously a very unique player in PK Subban coming back. The other guy that I would think if you polled him, of who he just hated the idea of trading, but he needed to do it, with Seth Jones. I know you've read, you've been writing some on this. We know his future is going to be an interesting one here with 1 year left on his contract. I'm not suggesting at all that he could come back to Nashville. It'd be a great dream. I think David Poile would love to figure out a way to do it, but it doesn't really look like it's in the cards. But what do you think is next for Seth Jones?
Well, I think he's going to be traded. I think the biggest question is, is it going to be a team that's trading for him for a long time or 1 year? Like, I would be curious about a team like Colorado, if they would look and say, we'll do it for a year. And I would look at a team like Philadelphia, and I would say, all right, we'll do it for a long time. And I think there's teams considering it. Now, it's a bigger risk if you're doing it for a year, obviously. But if you're Colorado, you could look at Seth Jones as being a piece of the puzzle to win the Stanley Cup. And I think that's a reasonable bet for the Avalanche to make. So to me, I think the biggest question is, who sees it what way, and how does that drive the market? Because I do think that Colorado will not be the only team that will consider it on a one-year thing. It's just that, does it make it harder for the Blue Jackets to get what they want if it's a one-year thing instead of a long-term thing?
While we're on the subject, what are your thoughts on down the road as a player for PK Subban? He's been a little bit out of sight, out of mind from the Nashville perspective since he's been traded. He's only played against the Predators twice, right? When they played New Jersey 2 years ago, and obviously didn't come close to seeing him this year. But I think we're all a little bit mystified that he just has not been able to find that top level game of his. Where do you think there'll be a resurgence here? I know he's going to be, we all know that he'll be a lights out commentator whenever he wants to be, but I got to feel like he thinks there's more in the tank as a player.
Well, first of all, about PK, I think he's got a ton of pride, right? And I think he cares a lot. And I think anytime you have that, that's important. I think one of the biggest issues with PK, and I think it's one of the reasons that Nashville traded him, was, I think they were worried about, his long-term kind of his back and where that was going to go. And, PK has built himself up to be stronger. And I think some people felt he was too bulky, that it put more pressure on his back and it kind of slowed him down a bit. and I understand he's worked to become sleeker, you know, maybe seeing a bit of a change of that, and hopefully that will help him. You know, I still think he's an incredibly talented guy. I still think he has a chance to be a difference maker. I just think that, you know, any time as a defenseman when your back becomes a problem, that's a problem. And I think it became one for him, and I think he has to kind of change. He's kind of worked on changing his training, and I think that will definitely help him.
We're talking to Elliot Friedman from Sportsnet, our weekly chat with him. Our buddy Adam Vingan of The Athletic did a poll with Predators fans and asked 12 questions of kind of where they were with this team. And one of them was, ideally, how should the Predators approach this offseason? 76.4% said a soft reset, tweak the core, fill the roster holes with prospects. And that was actually the way that I voted too. Now, that's easier said than done. We've talked with you before. We know the contracts, that some of the contracts that these course players have. But if that is the route that David Poile goes this summer, what do you believe is the best way for him to go about maybe moving some of those core players while also looking at the future and the contracts that he has to take care of as well?
Well, I'm one of the people who believes that Ekholm wants to come back. So my biggest question is, what does that look like? You know, what are we talking about here? The other question I have is, what is the contract that you can move that maybe you don't want to move and it hurts you a bit to do it, but it allows you to start your reset? Who is that on your roster?
I mean, I would say it's probably Arvidsson or Ellis.
Is that fair to say? Don't you think, Chase? We debate that daily.
Yeah.
It's a revolving door, but there's a lot of different ways you could do it, but none of them, like you said, Elliot, it's going to be painful, whatever it is.
Ideally, you're trying to move one of the $8 million guys, but that's much easier said than done.
That's extremely hard to do right now. Like, that's really going to hurt you to do that. In the sense that what you're going to have to do to make that happen. You know, I wrote about Ellis last year. I heard Ellis was really hurt and upset by that. Again, though, to me, it says the respect that he has as a player. I don't think there's a lot of long-term contracts that teams could move right now. I think his is one. People really respect. You know, Arvidsson's a really interesting one because I think he could be had. I just think that the issue with Arvidsson is, you know, he hasn't been the same player since the injuries. I don't think the money is a question. I think the term is a bit. But he hasn't been the same since he got hit a couple of times. And, you know, I don't think anybody ever questions his courage or his will. It's just, can he do the things that he made his career doing? So I could see the possibility of that. Just the question of his effectiveness. Ellis, I absolutely believe there are teams out there that would happily trade for Ellis. I just, you know, like I said, I think that he was upset by the speculation last time. And I think that's something that's very delicate for Nashville to manage.
So along those lines, you know, another thing that we have discussed is this team needing that just shut down forward that can score goals, that can be the superstar, that is not easy to find. They don't grow on trees.
Nope.
We all know that.
Nope.
I think many have thought that Forsberg was going to become that, but he's battled injuries. He hovers around, like, when healthy, probably a 30, 35 goal scorer. Maybe he cracks 40. One of these days, but he's got to play a full season to be able to do that. Do you think that a trade involving Ellis and more could potentially result in getting a forward similar to that, what we're talking about?
It could. The thing is, like I think, if, for example, let's just say for argument's sake, since we're playing hypotheticals, if Ellis was to get moved, I think you'd be getting something very significant for him. Like, the only way I think he's getting traded is if you look at the deal and you say, oh, okay, I get it. And like I said, he's got a lot of respect. You know, people really like and respect his game. They respect his personality. They respect his preparation, everything he brings. So I would think if that was to happen, you would get something where you'd say, oh, okay. Or there'd be another corresponding move that came with it where you'd say, oh, okay. Like, one of the things I think Nashville did last year was they waited out in the summer. Like, you made a lot of your signings late. Granlund and Holla, for example.
Right.
And, like, I don't think David Poile ever does nothing for a reason. That says to me that he was waiting on some other things. You know, I've told you that I said, I think last week, that I think Killorn might have been one of them. I thought that they dipped their toes on Marchessault from Vegas. You know, the other one that I do wonder about is if he doesn't stay in Boston, which I think he'd like to do, you know, I wonder, like Taylor Hall would make sense for you guys. Now, I don't know if any of that's going to happen, but I saw a GM last year who waited and waited and waited, saw some other things that didn't unfold and said, okay, I'm now going to plan B. But I would think that he's looking at it similarly this year. I think he's got some things that he's going to swing at, and he's going to see what comes his way.
I know this is one of those open-ended questions that you could really ask every year for every team, but do you view this as the most important offseason in David Poile's tenure, of knowing where this team has been, where they are right now, and the resurgence that we saw in the second half of the season, that he has to get this right?
Well, I think that I don't know if I would say this one is the most important. I think it might be the most interesting. You know, I look at, unfortunately, a lot of decisions that he, like, there's probably decisions he wants to make that he knows he can't make. Would he like to move Duchesne? Yes, I think he would. Would he like to move Johansson? Yes, I think he would. But that's not necessarily going to be possible, right? So then it takes you to, okay, what can I do? And, you know, we've talked about some of those names, and it's very important to get those things right. There's no question about it. But I would say that, you know, the summer you guys traded Weber, that's the biggest decision he's ever made, I would think. And, you know, look at, you know, like, I don't know if you could ever make anything that would ever be bigger than that. I just remember how seismic that was. So the one thing I think about Poile is he won't be afraid. He'll say, I've done bigger than this, so I know how to deal with it. I know how to handle it. I wouldn't say it's your most important offseason, but I would say it's one of your more interesting, because I think the choices that he's going to have to make might hurt a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. Elliot Friedman here with us from Sportsnet. Elliot, appreciate the time as always. We'll do it again next Thursday.
All right, guys. Take care. See you next week.
Yep, have a good weekend. Elliot Friedman, 31 thoughts, soon to be 32 thoughts, does a fantastic job for Sportsnet. A lot to discuss, including the results of Adam's poll. I was reading through it and found some of them interesting, so we'll discuss that. But first, Darren, you're going to tell us about DraftKings.
My favorite sportsbook. Yeah, I am. And it's also America's top-rated sportsbook. I love using DraftKings Sportsbook. It's easy to navigate, which is important to me. Also has plenty of instructions for new bettors. Willie, if you ever became a new bettor, they've got instructions for that. And nearly limitless ways to get in on all the action. My friends and family have been loving DraftKings Sportsbook, and I know you will too. Listen to this great offer they've got right now. DraftKings Sportsbook is putting you courtside with a chance to turn $1 into $150 in site credits. So all you have to do is pick any basketball team that's still in contention, bet $1 of your own, and if that team wins, you win $150. In site credits. Don't forget, they've also got great offers, great odds, and promotions on baseball, hockey, and so much more all week long. It's safe, secure, and reliable. You can deposit and withdraw your funds at your convenience. All you have to do is download that top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app right now and use the promo code 1025GAME. And when you sign up, turn $1 into $150 in site credits and free site credits. All you have to do is pick a basketball team of your choice to win their next game, and if they do, you claim $150 in free credits. That promo code, again, 1025GAME for a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Remember, you must be 21 years of age or older, Tennessee only. Wagers paid out in site credits. Restrictions do apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789. Good stuff from Elliot Friedman, as always. I told you, before we get out of here, we're going to give away Bonnaroo tickets. We've got a pair of four-day passes to Bonnaroo, September 2nd through the 5th. That's in Manchester. Foo Fighters, Lizzo, My Morning Jacket, Incubus, and many, many more. Because the Seattle Kraken have named their first ever head coach, they become franchise number 32. Elijah, we love you. But we're going caller number 32 in honor of the Seattle Kraken.
No, you did
not. 615-737-1025. Caller 32 is going to be your winner. Not 31, not 33, not 30. Caller 32 is going to win a pair of four-day passes to Bonnaroo. Elijah, good luck.
These and phones might break.
You're going on the list. You're going on the list tomorrow.
Good luck.
Jeez. I can guarantee that. Did you even ask or tell him, at least give him a heads up before you said this on air?
Absolutely not. No way.
You did this to me one time, and I cussed your name like no other.
Welcome to the game. You're caller one. Welcome to the game, caller two.
But in mine was, I think I was the 59. I think that you did that, and I was like, you son of a.
I can't even count that high. This is going to be tough.
You son of a biscuit. What? Yeah, caller six, caller seven. Elijah looks like he's got caller seven. Keep it coming, caller 32.
Game,
best
caller seven,
of luck
try again.
To you. Best
game,
of
caller
luck.
Eight, try again.
This is borderline abuse in the workplace right here.
No, it is not. Elijah is not afraid.
Listen, Elijah just learned to count.
He's going
to
send you to
the game, your caller 10, try again. The game, your caller 17, try again. The game, your caller 23, try again. The game, your caller 32, try again. Oh, wait,
no,
you're a winner.
No, you're a winner. Don't try again. You're a winner.
You would never do that. You would never do that, Chase.
Never. Because I'm not a producer anymore.
Me either. Oh, but wait a minute. I just did it. Good luck, everybody. Keep those calls coming. I see the lines are blowing up. They've been loaded for a while. Elijah, you just keep answering. We won't ask you to do anything. We'll just have you just keep answering phones. But keep up the good work. Let's
go
over.
Changing your name to Richard for that one.
Let's go to. And just so you know, I did give him the heads up, okay? All right? Just everybody remain calm.
Okay.
Remain calm. He knew what was coming. All right? I didn't throw him a curveball. All right, let's get to Mr. Vingen's poll, where he had almost – we didn't get to 1,000. He wanted to get to 1,000. I think he got to around 950
mm-hmm.
for the results. But we all subscribe to The Athletic, so we all three cannot – go at once. So, Chase, you've got everything right there in front of you. Let's just kind of go. What jumped out at you on some of these questions that we can discuss?
Yeah, so the first question, which best describes
your caller 29. Sorry.
Which best describes your feelings about the current state of the Predators franchise? Majority, 42%, said skeptical. That didn't surprise me. Okay. I think people are a little, restless. The natives are restless. Skeptical, okay. But the one that kind of stood out, and I asked Elliot about it, ideally, how should the Predators approach the offseason? You know, there was a time where people were going, blow it up, move on, it's done, and then they went on the run that they did. 76.4% of the people that voted in this said soft reset, tweak the core, fill roster holes with prospects. I thought that it would be a little closer, that you would still have the blow it up crowd because they got knocked out of the first round. I voted in soft reset. That's where I went. The others were go for it, make a splashy trade or free agent signing. That was 10%. Stay the course, no additions needed was like less than 1%, and blow it up was 12.6. But I was a little surprised.
How many people do you think at the trading deadline when it looked like they were out of it? How many people, what were the percentages of people who were saying blow it up?
I would say a vast majority.
Right. I don't know the number either, but I mean, we all saw the same thing on Twitter. We all saw.
But at the trade deadline, see, that's the thing. Right at the trade deadline, they were back in it. So it was
okay,
tougher. But
maybe
you still.
Not at the trading deadline. Let's say weeks out.
Yeah,
from the trade
it was
deadline.
Blow it up.
Well, let's say the date, like about March 15th.
March 15th.
That was Dr. Death was at the door at that
Steve Williams?
Yes, we took the calls. Who did you say?
Dr. Death Steve Williams.
Oh.
The wrestler.
Okay.
He was at the door.
He was at the door. And
remember, Eddie Fogler used to use that term a lot when a college basketball team was floundering in February, right? Dr. Death will visit your locker room. You have to keep him. You have to keep him out of your locker room.
Well, the reason I said that, Chase, you don't remember, at a previous stop, Willie, was there not also a guy in the office referred to as Dr. Death? You know who I'm talking
yes.
about.
Oh, yes.
That was a throwback.
You didn't want
right
to see
there.
Dr. Death.
No, that
you,
was a
you
throwback.
You did not want to see Dr. Death.
Was that at the stop when you first started working together or the stop
yes,
before
correct,
this one?
Yes, correct.
Okay.
First stop. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yep.
Dr.
The
Death
one with
was,
three call letters was, and not four.
It was no bueno. No bueno if Dr. Death wanted to see you. It was kind of like Major League with the red tag in your locker.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He listens to the show. If he's listening right now, he's chuckling.
He's a very good guy. Dr. Death is a very yes. nice man. He's a great person.
But those are words I never thought I would hear.
He had the job that nobody really wanted, but it was mm-hmm. part of the
Did
part
you get
of the
a
job.
Winner?
Yeah, after taking all those calls, and I think my ear, my right ear no longer works. We finally got one.
Did you break a sweat?
I'm going to have to change shirts, yes.
Okay.
Definitely panicked a little bit when I heard you say the number 32 on the air.
It's better than having to change pants.
Well, might have to do that too.
So who's our winner?
Rob Tabling is our winner.
All right. Congratulations, Rob. How did you? I mean, that was good timing. How did he? He just
Great
he worked it in there perfect. He knew.
He knew
he worked
exactly
it in between 31
digits.
And 33. Yeah, he did. Good job.
That was good.
But going back to the conversation, I would say those numbers were pretty high. We took enough calls. We saw what people were saying on social media. So I would love to know with all those people, whatever the percentages were, we believe it was hovering on the masses, right? Wouldn't you say? I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the exact number was, but what changed? I mean, what? They went out. Yes, they made it, but
they
were
20
one
out of 28.
Okay.
They won 20 out of 28.
Okay.
They went. Yeah. I mean, I think that's what it is. But I'm saying on this result now, almost 75% are now on. Hey, soft reset. Just tweak it.
Right.
Don't blow it up.
76%.
So what changed?
Yeah, 76%.
Well, just getting in the winning streak?
Also, well, that's one of the questions on the survey, if you saw it, is how much did the 27-1 finish influence your decision? And certainly they voted accordingly.
57.7%.
If you are in the club of blow it up, I want somebody to call me up and call the show and tell me how you blow it up. Tell me how you do it.
Okay.
Are you going to buy out about six guys' contracts? Like, how would you do it? As you just got done hearing from Elliot, nobody's going to take on these contracts, right? Unless, I guess maybe the answer would be you blow it up by trading some contracts to teams and you get people's worst contracts in return. Like, blowing it up is not as easy as it is in, say, football, where – if the contract's not guaranteed, you can cut guys. But blowing it up is a lot harder than it might appear. Would you guys agree with that?
Well, typically it starts.
You have to have
TNT,
a taker on the other end,
and you have you have to pull the lever up, and then you have to have a countdown. You have to clear the area, and then you push the lever, and it's blown up.
But see what I'm saying?
That's how it works.
Guaranteed contracts.
I know.
Guaranteed contracts. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not as easy as you might just say, oh, yeah, just blow it up. Just start trading guys. This is not fantasy football. This is not fantasy hockey where you just call up your buddy and you figure it out. It's hard. So I don't really think it's possible
Well,
to truly blow it up.
That actually, in all seriousness, that
do you
is
just,
a
do you
good
disagree?
Point.
Good,
like, no,
no, you can't. Just, I mean, it's easier said than done. Like, you cannot.
They're locked
just
into
go,
some things. They
just clear the deck. Like David Poile does not have the ability just to clear the deck and say, okay, you know, all this for all the people who want to start over. Here you go. Easier said than done. Like that's just virtually impossible. Cannot happen.
You could trade Ekholm. You could trade Forsberg because they each have a year left on their contract.
I guess it depends on Chase.
But then I think it would be like
it depends on
Yost
what is your
somebody after that.
Yeah, but what is your definition of blowing it up? Like don't clearing the deck that is not possible.
Yeah.
But Chase, like you, so okay, you talking about starting working on the core.
Yeah,
then,
I mean,
okay, you could technically do that. I mean, Elliot just brought up trading Ryan Ellis. You could trade Ellis. You could trade Ekholm.
You could trade Arvidsson.
You could trade Arvidsson if you want, right? So,
but you're still going to be Yossi's not going anywhere. He's got full no movement, and I think he's somebody you could at least build around. So you're stuck with the $8 million guys and Johansson and Duchesne. So you're not blowing that up unless you somehow figure out how to get Seattle to take one of them, which we've discussed and what that would take. That means you're probably losing a Fabro, maybe even a Tomasino, if you're that desperate in doing that, plus picks. So, yeah, it's impossible to just take the grenade, throw it in there, and blow it up. You can blow
even
up.
Even if it's possible, is that the smartest thing?
No,
it sounds a little crazy when you're saying. Now I see what you're saying. Like Ekholm's tradable. If you really did, okay. If you're trying to answer my question, how would you blow it up? I think you hit on it, Chase. You would trade Forsberg. You would trade Ekholm. You would let Granlund go. You would probably try to find a taker for another contract. Like you guys mentioned, Ellis. And you heard Elliot. He thinks Ellis and maybe Arvidsson have a little bit of value, even if you didn't get much back for Arvidsson. So I guess that would define blowing it up. But is that really what you want? Because you're still stuck with the contracts that are putting you in this position in a lot of ways, right?
Here is what's kind of an interesting take on where do you want to be if you're a fan? Like what? So there is a thing called no man's land, right? And it's just all on how
yes.
you view it. Like let me give you a for example. Like basically in our travel ball world, and Willie, you've gone through this. You've probably seen what I'm about to describe. So there is Game 7 is basically the outfit that's really got a grasp on this market. Others, as you brought up Perfect Game and you tripping up, they're trying to make their way, but they just haven't been able to get a real solid grip at our age level in this market. So Game 7 is got the market cornered, and basically every weekend they're pumping out a tournament with anywhere that we're in 20 to 26 teams, which then has you having three brackets on Sunday. Okay, you've got a top bracket, you've got a middle bracket, and you've got the bottom bracket.
Right.
And we've been in this before. There's other teams that, you know, that we know and are around, good guys, good teams. You go 2-0 on pool play on Saturday. What does that mean? Where are you going, Willie, on Sunday?
You're going to the top bracket.
Top bracket.
You're playing
Guess
with
what?
The big boys.
And guess what? You really aren't. You really aren't.
Maybe you're not quite there.
You're not quite there. Like, you can maybe win a game, but to truly win, like, but more times than not, you really aren't a top bracket team, and you're going one and done on Sunday. So all those good feelings of Saturday, going 2-0, and everybody feels good, and you go home, and then you realize you're a 2 or 3 seed on Sunday, and then you get the early exit, and you're one and done. And that happens to you a couple of times, and you're like, man, I'd just rather be in the middle bracket and play, you know, 2 or 3 games on Sunday and win it all, right? Get a ring.
Right. And
you're
at the
more
end of the
of
day,
a middle bracket
game,
team.
Everybody celebrates. Yeah.
Right. So even though it sounds crazy, like Chase may be tilting his head going, wait a minute, you'd rather be in a middle bracket than a top bracket? Yeah, I guess it's knowing what you are. Like to get to that top bracket and actually succeed, you realize you're really one or two better players away from truly getting that ring in the top bracket. So what you really are is a very, very competitive team in the middle bracket, a team that can win it on Sunday. And so those are great feelings, but really in that top bracket, you know, realistically, you're probably going to keep getting in that top bracket and you're probably going to be one and done. In fact, we know teams like that. We've been in that position and we go one and done. And all of a sudden, all those good feelings are quickly evaporated by Sunday morning, right? You're back home by lunchtime and it's like, oh, okay. Well, I guess we've got the rest of the day. So the point is, what are you if you're a fan base, right? And so that is a fair question. Yeah. Like, what do you think you are right now today? Are you a playoff team?
Yeah.
Okay. And is that okay?
I think that
and
was
are you okay if you get into the playoffs? Are you okay with first round exits?
Yeah. And there's a
that's a dress in there, Chase. I think that's what you're getting at, right? There's a yeah. question along those lines.
Right. And I know we probably need
if you want to share it. I
know we need a break probably one more time and then I can share it on the other side.
That or do you want to just take it? You want to just take it to the top or you want
to? Let's take it to the top. Why not? We're on a roll.
We're on a roll.
Okay, so.
We're on a roll.
Combining some things together. One thing that that people are saying, okay, tweak, cool, all right. But then on the other hand, how much did the Predators 27-1 record in the second half change your outlook on the team? My thought is, if you're just tweaking a little bit, then you're going to think, oh, that significantly affected my opinion. But it was only slightly. 57.7% voted slightly. So that I was kind of like, okay. I thought it would have more of an impact. But then you get into, remember, some of the same folks that were saying blow it up, what were they also saying? They were saying that it needed to be a different person blowing it up and rebuilding it, right? It didn't need to be David Poile. 59.1% said Poile should not have been fired at the end of the season. 41% said yes. I was kind of thinking that that would be closer to 50-50, that the majority, almost 60%, were saying, nah, don't fire him, keep him. And then you have 34.8% that are in the, all right, they're kind of right there in the middle on him right now. 30% saying, leaning towards the other way of time for a change. And then you had people right in the middle on John Hines as well. So what I'm getting at is I'm seeing more of a kind of right in the middle of figuring out what they are.
And that's what I'm trying to get at. So,
right.
Right. And so what do you do? Like, how do you get out of the middle? That's the part that's interesting to me. Like, if you believe that you're kind of in that middle, how do you get to the top bracket, right? If we're kind of using this travel ball analogy. I'm sorry. That's just it relates to me. And a lot of you out there, you understand what I'm talking about. Some of you don't, and I apologize. But if you're in that middle bracket, like you're not in the bottom tier bracket, but if you're in that middle bracket and you're trying to win in the top bracket, you can get in the top bracket, but you're probably not going to win. So how do you get to that top bracket? How do you fix it by getting that top bracket? In other words, and people truly view you as a contender, not just a playoff team. They view you as a contender. That's how we were related, okay? So if you believe you're in the middle bracket and you're just a team that's going to hover around, if everything goes, you should get in the playoffs. You are a playoff team, but they don't view you as the top bracket, which means you're viewed as a contender. So how do you get to that?
Well, here is a quote that I think is a good one from one of the readers in Adam's article. And I think this is a take that would kind of define what you're talking about, Darren. The roster is stuck between older veterans who no longer produce and promising young players without franchise-altering potential. And he said, until David Poile moves on, you can expect more mediocrity. So I think that would define sort of the pessimistic view of some of the fans that are in that camp. But as you pointed out, Darren, with the travel ball reference, you're in that. I don't define this as mediocrity. Mediocrity to me would be you're missing the playoffs at least half the time. I think the bar is high because this team has made the playoffs very consistently. You cannot ignore that. So to me, that's not mediocrity. So to me, the definition is you're in the top tier, because you're in the playoffs every year, but you're not quite good enough to win the tournament in the top tier.
Yeah.
That's the parallel. So that's why soft reset is where they're at, because they're not that far from it, but it's difficult to get that last step, right? It's a difficult set of maneuvers that they're going to have to pull to get there. But then you look at Montreal, where they are today, and you look at the New York Islanders. I don't think there's a huge difference in the talent level. It's just putting it together at the right time. You know, the old definition of all you got to do is get in. I think there's a lot to be said for that.
Well, I guess you have to answer it. If you're in the top bracket and you need that bump to be considered the contender, that means you are one or two players away, one or two special players away. How do you get that? Well, there's two ways. You go out and you throw a bunch of money at them in free agency, or it's through the draft, right? You get those special players through the draft. And so what's the quickest way? That's the other part.
The quickest way is
to go out and throw a pile of money and try to do it that way. The slower way is through the draft.
And they don't exactly have a pile of money.
No. No. I agree.
With the salary cap where it is, they don't really have a pile of money. So it's got to be shrewd maneuvering to where you upgrade through that maneuvering, right? And I think we all agree that trying to move a big contract to create a little space to try to do something is probably the move to make.
So think about this. The Titans did what? The Titans needed to address what this offseason? Going into the offseason, first thing they needed to do was what? Address defense.
Pass rush.
Okay. They did that. But to do that, and to get where they could afford to do that, they had to rob Peter to pay Paul. I mean, they had to say goodbye to Jonnu Smith, say goodbye to Corey Davis. They had to cut Adoree Jackson, Malcolm Butler, Kenny Vaccaro. They had to lose some really good players in order to do that. Now, I understand the NHL is different. You can't just cut a guy and move on. All contracts are guaranteed.
That's the problem.
But that's what they're faced with. You know, is it going to take having to trade somebody like Ryan Ellis or Fabro, or, you know, it's going to hurt somebody you don't necessarily want to part with, but that's going to help bring back something that's going to help your team. That's what I think David is faced with right now and may have to do. Now, the question is, you know, because he's made these moves. He's done those moves that hurt. And some have worked, some haven't. So is he willing to do that again, and is it going to be the right one? And I think that fans may have in their head, send Ryan Ellis to Toronto for Mitch Marner, or a package to Toronto for Mitch Marner. It's not that simple. And chances are it probably isn't going to be for Mitch Marner.
Something tomorrow we can touch on, if we had to assess odds, what are the odds that David Poile pulls off another eye-opening wow trade this offseason? We've seen it in the past, but what do you think the odds are that we see it again this offseason? The, oh my goodness, what just happened? Basically a jaw-dropping trade. We can do that tomorrow. Willie, you're going
to – okay, would you put Nick Bonino for Luke Cunningham in that category?
No. I'm talking about PK for Shea Weber.
Because I think something like that is okay.
Seth
I think
Jones
something
for
in that
Ryan
caliber
Johansson,
is
that type of deal. No, I'm talking about jaw dropping.
I'm talking about league talk.
Like,
okay.
Well,
the
like
league's
what Chase
talking
just
about
said,
it.
And I brought this up weeks ago, right? The Ryan Ellis and somebody for Mitch Marner, something where you go,
yeah,
whoa.
Elliot's talking about it in Toronto. Like leading with it, like
yeah.
This
just
is what
a
just
jaw-dropping
happened.
Jaw-dropping trade. So we can do that tomorrow. Willie, you're going to take us out by telling us about the good folks at Loan Pronto.
Well, let's do that. Loan Pronto, of course, they have a great portfolio of things, and there are a couple of things that I like to emphasize each day with Loan Pronto. It's really two main things, and that's one. You've got home equity built up. Your home right now has a lot of value in our listening area. You can take advantage of that with a home equity loan that can get you tens of thousands of dollars out so that you can reinvest it somewhere where you need it, whether it be paying off some credit card debt or reinvesting in your home with a home improvement project. Then the other thing, of course, mortgage rates have plummeted back to their lowest points of the year. And so this is a fresh new chance to lock in your forever loan with Loan Pronto. Get that mortgage rate down. And so over the long term, you're going to save money every month on your monthly mortgage payment. So if your mortgage rate starts with a 3, you need to call this number right now for Loan Pronto, 615-499-5780, 615-499-5780, or go to loanpronto.com and ask about the zero-cost refi that I tell you about every day. Most loans get closed in 14 days. Most don't even require an appraisal. And you can even skip your next two house payments if you do it now. How's that for your summer budget? I'm telling you, you need to take advantage of this. 615-499-5780 or loanpronto.com, equal housing lender.
NMLS 166-1781. Subject to lender approval. Not all loans eligible for zero costs.